Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Hey everybody, we got a great one for a change. Andy Slavitt, his third time on. That is in every one of them. When I say great for a change, not with him, I meant our other guests, let's face it, have not been. No, everybody's been great, but Andy especially, and he's on. It's the third one for him for a reason. I don't think I've had anyone on as the sole guest twice, so this is his third. Let me remind you who he is, because I don't think we did this last time he was on. Last time he was on to tell about what all the Democratic candidates' health care policies were, which I thought was a helpful thing. And this is who Andy is. He's the guy who saved healthcare.gov. Remember healthcare.gov? They went online. It didn't work. The thing crashed. It just crashed miserably. They were trying to fix it, and a couple weeks went by, and Andy's in Minnesota. I know Andy from Minnesota. He's working at United Health. And he calls up HHS, just out of the blue, calls them up and says, hey, I think you don't have a technical problem here. I think you have, like, a administrative problem. You have an execution problem. Any technical thing can be figured out. But something's going wrong with the way you're managing this thing, the way this is being run. And they said, could you come out here? And he did. He flew out the next day with a sheet of paper, one sheeter, and a guy, another guy from United Health. They talked to him, and they did a press conference that day and said, hey, this is Andy Slavitt, and he's going to fix healthcare.gov and get it up in 5 weeks. And he didn't know that part of the press conference, the 5 weeks part. And so he did. He did it. He got it up. Essentially what he did was he saved the Affordable Care Act, and he saved the Obama administration. We wouldn't have had a second Obama administration without this guy. So that's why I have him on. He's a smart guy. He's also a friend, and you'll see that. And right now we're having guests who are sheltered themselves, isolated. And he's in his home in Minnesota. So he's there, and has a wife, Lana. He has two boys. One of them, Zach, helped him. We have to send a microphone that you have to attach to some computer to do this, and that's what he did. And you need Zach. You need his kid, Zach, who I think is 18. You need, and he's not, I guess he's not a millennial. He's something, the next thing after millennial. But as far as I'm concerned, he's still to blame for a lot of this, because I think he went to the beach, frankly. Not in Minnesota. I think he must have taken spring break somewhere and spread this coronavirus. Anyway, by the way, you're going to hear throughout this, and we're going to probably be talking about the coronavirus for some time. Every once in a while, I will maybe crack wise, say something that people will go, well, wait a minute, this is horrible, and it is. This is a horrible, horrible tragedy like we have not seen in our lifetimes. None of us. But comedians often do dark humor for a reason. And whenever I figure that out, I will tell you what it is. But I think it is to acknowledge that life has some dark aspects to it, and that we need to recognize that. And maybe sometimes the best way to handle that is with something that's really unique to humans, which is humor and laughter. Maybe dogs. I've seen a couple dogs. I've met a couple dogs who are funny. Anyway, this is with Andy Slavitt, and I don't know. We may have a couple sound difficulties, but I think we've tried to get them out of there. And because this mic, we don't have it perfected yet. We've been working with the Trump administration, but they haven't been as cooperative as we'd like on this. The president said that they aren't a shipping clerk. And this was FedEx. FedEx did this, and they did a fine job getting this microphone out to Andy, out to Edina, Minnesota. And this is interesting because now we're doing that. That's what we have to do with our guests. We got into Zach's hand, and Zach, the 18-year-old sub-millennial, whatever that is, he connected, and thank God for you guys who know how to do things technically but have terrible penmanship. Okay, so here is our interview with Andy Slavitt. Zach is 18, you say. Zach Slavitt is with Andy Slavitt at their home. They are sheltering in place in Edina, Minnesota.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And Zach has helped you connect because now this is how we're doing it. We're doing it. We're talking to folks who are sheltering, as they should. And with Andy Slavitt, who is former acting administrator of CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, under the Obama administration. And the guy, I like to say, Andy's been with us before. This is going to be another good one. It's going to be another good one because usually I say this is going to be a good one for a change, but everyone with you so far has been good, Andy.
Last time we were doing this, weren't we like face-to-face or shoulder-to-shoulder?
I believe we were. I think both times we were. Yeah. And
now we're in this kind of, hey, I'm at home. Are you at home kind of thing?
Yeah. I am in a hermetically sealed studio in my home, and I'm waving now at Franny. Honey, she can't see me, and it's soundproof, so...
They were out of hermetically sealed things at our store. They disappear every morning at 6 a.m., I think.
Yeah, you got to get there early. No, we are sheltering here, unfortunately, in D.C. I mean, fortunate for one thing, we have two grandchildren, a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old here, who are sheltering 2 blocks from us at home with their parents, so we can go over there, get our exercise, and then help put them to bed. One of the tragedies about this whole thing is, Andy, you know that I was on tour. I was the only former senator comedian currently on tour and performing for thousands. And now I can't do that anymore. So my daughter, who was a former third grade teacher, has organized their day. They're all at home. She's working from home. She's structured their day. They have math. They have reading. They have language. They have art. And then there's downtime, free time, and I do my act for them. And they're getting a little sick of that, but at night I can read them age-appropriate bedtime stories.
First of all, we've all become homeschoolers. I mean, who would have thought? Do you think this is the first pandemic comedic conversation to have existed?
Oh, no. In 1918, 1919, with the Spanish flu, just some hilarious stuff came out of that. But let's get to something serious here, because people are on edge, particularly former FEMA director Craig Fugit. We're taping this on Thursday, and earlier today, Andy, you were making one of your appearances on cable TV, this one with Katie Turr of MSNBC, and Director Fugit took issue with something that you had said about the need for national leadership from the president, kind of a command structure from on top. And he kind of testily shot back at you and said, no, Governor is sitting back waiting for instructions from, then you kind of came back with, well, let's play it.
With all due respect to your other guests, there's not a governor in the country that's waiting for the federal government right now. They are all acting. What they need is coordination, because we have, believe it or not, We have masks. We have a lot of these things. Guess where they are? They're sitting in the supply chain. People are profiteering off of them, or they're going to places where people are hoarding them. Now, that happens in a crisis. It's only by someone looking through the entire system and seeing where those needs are that you can say, stop hoarding them all in Texas. We need them in New York right now while we build manufacturing capability and put them in Texas. So what your other guest is suggesting here is not helpful. We need a great partnership between the federal and state government.
Bullshit people.
Craig, you want to sit down and respond to this? I guess Craig has left. Andy, he doesn't agree with you at all.
I guess not. But look, these are trying times, and everyone's trying their best. And I know Craig is, I don't know Craig personally, but I'm sure he's working his hardest and trying his best. Everybody is. These are unprecedented times. Understandable that he's frustrated.
I think he just, at that moment, there's a lot of frustration out there.
There's a lot of stress going on.
Let's go to the point you were making, is that the president said that he is a wartime president now. Although he, I guess, is not aware that we are at war elsewhere, but.
Right. He's sort of trying that on for size. I think you'll see at the press conference, he's kind of like, and I'm like, you know, whatever works. I mean, if you want to wear a costume, if that will help you feel like you're the hero but just please make decisions, get your troops the gear they need, get the healthcare workers the equipment they need. This all started because he said he was going to invoke the Defense Production Act, which would allow him to take factories and produce a lot of the things that we're desperately, desperately lacking.
Like when we're at war.
Yeah, like we're in a war. And then today he backed off on it and said, nah, I'm not such a fan of that. And, you know, this just is not the time for it to say one thing one day, do another thing the next day because you got a phone call from somebody. If you're going to do that, you can't call yourself a wartime president. That's not what we saw from Eisenhower. That's not what we saw from Churchill. And if he wants to be that guy, he needs to get his troops equipped. He needs to read the maps. He needs to read. He needs to do the work. He needs to level with us. And so far, he's not doing all those things. And I don't say those things because I want him to fail. I mean, God knows, I've been on your show before. We've talked about Trump. You know, there were plenty of not nice things I've had to say about him, and I think he's earned them all. But that's not where my head is right now. Right now, I want him to succeed.
That's right. We were talking last night, and that's what you said. We want to save lives. That's what you want. You want to save lives. You want to save Republican lives. You want to save Democratic lives. You want to save independent lives. You want to save Democratic socialist lives.
That's a good ad at the end.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. What you're talking about is like literally equipment, like masks. I mean, I think it was on the show you were on with Katie Turr. She said something about suggesting that if you run out of, those in the front lines, the nurses, the doctors, run out of masks, surgical masks, to use bandanas, like in a holdup in the Old West. You put a bandana over your face so that the marshal can't identify you.
She's quoting the CDC, which was to say, if you can't find a mask, you put on a bandana or a scarf, which we really don't need the CDC for. I mean, to be totally honest, people really can figure that out without the analysis of the CDC. But this goes to the kind of point I was trying to make on the show, which is everybody and their brother is trying to procure the things they need to save their lives and ours. And we look to the federal government for help, and they look to the federal government for help. Andrew Cuomo is begging. I mean, he's literally on TV begging Trump for help, putting his hand out. And, you know, one day Trump says one thing and the next day he says the other. And I think what's going on is people are all trying to figure out, how do I manage his psyche so that he wants to actually do the right thing so he can look like the winner?
You have been very active in basically the stay the fuck home. Is that what you call it? And I'm not, I try not to unnecessarily use obscenity here, but is that the name of your?
It really depends on the audience. So, you know, when we in the literature, we say stay the F home, or we just say stay home. The website is called stayhomesavelives.us. So there's really something for everyone.
Okay, so it's basically the message is the same, which is stay home, stay home. And you were getting this message out, have been doing that, and still continue to do that, even as millennials like Zach, and I don't know what a millennial is. Is Zach a millennial? He isn't. He's something else, right?
I think he's the next thing.
Yeah, but I still blame him. These kids in Florida on spring break running around going like, I'm not sick, but I'm getting sick because I'm with a whole bunch of people. And then we're going to go back to wherever we are, wherever we live, and give this to somebody. They're going to give it to somebody else. And we're going to have way, way too many people sick at one time. Is that essentially what we're talking about?
There's two things that are disturbing. One is that 80% of the people who get the coronavirus get it from someone who didn't know they had it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may feel fine, but you're asymptomatic for quite a while. And younger people, 90% of kids who get it are asymptomatic the entire time. So, you know, it is incredibly disturbing because it defies like what you're seeing. It defies any experience you've ever had. And so it's understandable that people don't get it. And when I say get it, I mean that it's hard to sink in.
Right.
And it's really going to be hard to sink in for an extended period of time. Epidemiologists say that people can accept something like this for 2 weeks. But if after 2 weeks, the doom and gloom predictions don't come to them, they relax and let it up. The other thing that's happened, the other fact, I said there were two facts. The second one is that people's attitudes about this, and you kind of referenced it earlier, appear to come from which news channel is the primary channel they use to get the news.
Okay, there's a study out. Basically, the people who watch Fox are much less likely to believe that this is serious than people who say watch CNN or watch MSNBC. Is that correct?
That's right. The truth is, a lot of people are going to die from this. Many people already have, but really a drop in the bucket compared to the estimates. There was a study from the Imperial College that was probably the most definitive thing we know so far about how long this will last and how many fatalities it will be. Their estimate on the high side is that 4 million Americans are going to die from coronavirus. And their estimate on the low side is 500,000. Now, I just feel the need to say that they could be way off. I mean, all kidding aside, it's like, you know, it's like the end of the first inning and someone's projecting what will happen, what will be the score at the end of the ninth inning. And no, you know, you had 8 innings to play. We got pitchers to bring in, you got batters, trick plays, and all everything you do during the course of the game. But it's helpful to know that if we did nothing, we would be very much at the high end of that range, meaning if we continued to socially interact and did all the Florida beach stuff we wanted and saw our family and you know as much as we wanted, it's hard. It's hard not to. I mean, these are big, big, big adjustments. But we've never dealt with anything in my lifetime that we have no immune system for. And that spreads through the air, aerosol. It spreads through the air, and to which you know, to some portion of the population, it's lethal. And what makes the hashtag stay home thing particularly important is that many of us are going to get this, and for many of us, it's going to be like the flu. The problem is we can't all get it at once, because if we get it all at once, we overwhelm the already constrained healthcare system. Which is happening because the number of people who get it doubles every 3 days. And so no healthcare system, if you keep doing that, which is what's happening because of the rate at which someone gets it and interacts and infects other people, then someone who may need it, who may have it and may be able to survive it, can't get care. It's tragically, there's a hospital in Seattle that I just heard, I had a conversation, just heard that they, if people who are over 80, they are basically making the hard decisions not to treat them.
They're doing triage over 80.
Yeah. And that's going to happen. I mean, this is going to it's not the fault of the hospital. Nobody wants to be in that position, but we have, I'll give you an idea. In New York City, we have about 3,000 intensive care unit beds, which is where you need to be if you want to be on a ventilator. And the mayor and the governor are projecting that within the next few weeks, they'll have the need for potentially 30 or 40,000 intensive care unit beds.
Now, I have an old ventilator in my basement. It's from the 50s, and it's got leather tubes. And it's kind of dusty. Uh-huh. You think I can get something for that?
Put it on eBay. I'd start the bidding high.
Okay, we're going to take a little break here to go to a commercial. And we'll be right back with Andy Sun. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, now, basically what you're saying, I feel like the audience listening to this podcast has heard this, and I feel like more often than not, they're watching MSNBC or CNN, and they're reading maybe the New York Times and the Washington Post, or they're going online to reliable sources, and they know this. Our problem is, of course, the people who don't know this. Fox has turned around a little bit, right?
Yeah. To be fair, Tucker Carlson, if you believe what was in the newspaper, went down to Mar-a-Lago and was just put his proverbial finger in Trump's face and said, this is serious. This is ridiculous. This is not a PR hoax. And it may be, in fact, responsible for bringing Trump around. I think some of the hosts are still making light of it. And when they have Larry Kudlow and others from the Trump administration on, who's trying to cheerlead the economy, you know, it's a little softer than it was before because facts are facts. There's body counts. I mean, this is going to be, watching TV is going to be a really horrific experience because every day and every newscast is going to begin with a body count total. And each day it's going to sound more and more unbelievable. And I think that's going to hit some people. I think, quite honestly, other people, there's got to be some defense mechanism against accepting that because it just doesn't seem real. So I'm not quite sure we've unlocked the sociological elements because asking people to stay home is hard. Asking people to stay home has not only economic consequences, but major social consequences. We're not wired that way. And in America, we're used to doing whatever the hell we want.
And here's my question. Okay. You broached this a little bit, What's it going to be like in 2 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now? When you watch CNN or MSNBC or maybe even Fox, is it going to start to be about mental health? Is it going to be 24/7 now, instead of epidemiologists? Is it just going to be therapists and psychiatrists?
I've been on probably 15 to 20 shows in the last week or few days. I will tell you that we are going to see newscasters crying on TV. And I've had several of them after the clips get on with me and sound like they're almost in tears. I've heard our local congressman did a phone call for his constituents, and he had an ER doc on, and the ER doc was talking just about what was going on, and he started to cry. Bill Ackerman, who is this sort of, you know, sharky kind of New York hedge fund guy, got on CNBC yesterday, which March, whatever it was, and started to talk about the impact on the stock market and what was going on. And he started to cry. And the stock market started dropping like hundreds of points during this episode.
Basically, if you're on CNBC and you're talking about stocks, don't cry. That's the message right now. If you're listening to this podcast and somehow you're one of these people who go on CNBC, when you're talking about the stock market, be chipper. Say, now's the time to buy. Do what the president has been saying since day one. Okay, I went on Twitter and asked people following me to ask Andy some questions. So, Andy, you ready? They're going to come at you. Does Andy know the true story around the WHO test, World Health Organization test kits, and why the United States government did not purchase them? Dr. Birx today made it sound like they were faulty. This is not what I've read. It's from Laura Hillstrom.
Well, so I don't know firsthand, but I will tell you what I do know. I think it's pretty clear that mistakes were made, not necessarily just that one, and it's not even clear that would have been the right thing to do. I don't know, but they had three opportunities to get a test done earlier, as much as a month earlier. One was the WHO test. They could have taken that.
That's the World Health Organization, and they devised the test, and we could have taken that test and had a test very early. But we did not. And the CDC did a test, its own test, and it was faulty. Is that correct?
It was faulty. Yes. And then the third thing is they were offered about a month earlier, while the president was saying that this was all a hoax, they were offered by the commercial labs who could see what was coming, that the labs here in the U.S. would develop the test. And the CDC said, no, we got this. Mm. And so, look, it's all water under the bridge right now. I think someday somebody will write a big report about what went wrong and making sure it doesn't happen again.
New question. Would you like him, that's you, to speak on the second wave of cases hitting Singapore, Taiwan, and Hong Kong and what that might mean for the U.S.?
Well, those are countries that, as far as I know, still have very, very low caseloads and have been very, very effective. They were, I think, much more regimented and much earlier in how they handled things. Although, you know, again, it's still early. We'll learn more. What I think is relevant about the question is that the Imperial College report suggests that there is very likely to be two waves here in the U.S., that there will be a wave and then things will start to dissipate. We'll start to see improved numbers. People will be very, very, very relieved, but that at that point, we still won't have what is referred to as herd immunity, which is enough people in the population immune. And that so people will start returning to their normal lives and NBA games will resume and all of a sudden it will pop up again. And that will be a very, very dangerous time because it'll be hard to tell the public that things aren't getting better. Certainly be hard to tell Trump things aren't getting better. and he'll tell everyone that things are getting better. And it's clear as day that a second wave will come right after that.
They're saying a vaccine is like a year and a half away. That's what I keep hearing.
Yeah. I mean, they're actually, let me just clarify that too, because a vaccine isn't necessarily a year, an effective vaccine isn't necessarily a year and a half away. But what is true is that to develop an effective vaccine and produce it would take 18 months or so. And they'll cut corners and maybe you can trim a couple months off it, but that's how long it would take. And then once you do that, you got to hope that it's successful and it works. But it's not really possible to develop it much more quickly than that.
Okay, here's another question about a different kind of test, I think. And speaking of tests, and you were talking about the NBA coming back, what the hell was that? Why were NBA players getting tests when other people should be getting the tests?
So that's actually a part of my advice to people is that if you want to get a test, you should join the NBA.
Right? Yeah. But that usually takes years.
Sure, you should have started, admittedly, earlier.
Okay.
But what do I think of the equity issue of famous people getting tests? I think it sucks. I think it's not hard for the NBA to go to a private lab and purchase tests. And what the NBA would say is it's not our goddamn fault that this country can't produce enough tests. Don't blame us that there aren't a lot of tests. And we weren't testing ourselves. You'd still have this problem.
Here's a question from Max Haynes. Can a test be made that will show your past contagion? Post-contagious people could be the first line of helpers and start the economy back up.
There'd be a test that would, I think it would be a different type of test that would test antibodies. And I believe that kind of test can be made. So, but the premise of the question is a really good one, which is that at some point in the not too distant future, New York will be past this. It will have been the horror show that it is. But you'll have a whole bunch of people who have who are now immune. And in several months' time, there'll be a large number of people in New York that will be immune. I have an employee in New York who has the coronavirus right now. And in several weeks, he'll be immune. Now, he will be able to presumably go to the next city where there is the virus spreading. And presuming he has any skills, he can help out without fear of infection. And I think...
But he's an employee of yours and has no skills. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying he can probably move boxes.
Okay.
Around. His name is Dean. He's a hell of a nice guy. And he certainly can do more than move boxes. And he's got coronavirus, so we shouldn't make fun of him.
He will make a he'll make a contribution somehow when he is has immunity, and then at some point we'll have herd immunity, right?
That's right. And we'll have some.
When is that? Right. When will that be?
So the expectation is that between 20% and 60% of the population will get coronavirus. And obviously, if it's 20%, there'll be far, far, far fewer fatalities. So that would be a good thing. That would mean that we were incredibly strict about holding ourselves inside for the next 18 months until or whenever a vaccine was developed. But if we are not as good at it, they think the numbers could be as high as 60%. And if 60% of the people that you knew had already been infected and were immune, that means it would be more difficult to spread it. Right now, the average person who gets it spreads it to 2.3 people on average. But if 60% of those people had already had it, the spreading would start to slow way, way, way down.
Let me ask you something. Is there then a push-pull on isolating the way we are to avoid this peak where our hospitals are overrun?
versus getting the getting to a herd immunity?
You have asked, this is the probably what will be the central question in all of this, is there will be a tug of war between what I would refer to as the epidemiology, or the, what we have, everything we would do to minimize the death rate, versus the economic and sociology realities. I mean, you can't freeze the economy and you can't tell people not to connect with each other for 18 months, or at least many of us find it difficult to imagine that happening. And so where you probably end up in is some middle ground. And I think we'll have, and we will probably end up having some interesting public debate that we've never had before around that very topic. If you were going to optimize to save lives, the consequence might be you throw the country into a depression. And by the way, you could lose a lot of lives through a depression in a lot of different ways. So it's not necessarily clear that the best answer is going to be, hey, let's just optimize for that and screw the economy and screw the sociology, because that could be quite dangerous in other ways. So,
but will the debate be sort of, okay, we understand this argument, this argument that I just brought up, and that there is going to be a middle ground that minimizes the number of deaths while maximizing maybe mental health and our economic well-being?
Yeah, I think it's going to be it's a kind of conversation that at least I don't think we've ever had as a society before. And I think it really needs to happen in an open, honest, transparent way. It's as difficult as possible, because it really is. There's no way to win. I mean, this isn't about here's the way to win. There will be things we can do to make the whole situation better, but then there will just be some very difficult choices. So if we get to the fall and President Trump orders the NFL season to begin, after all, we have an election coming and people are getting restless and the economy is suffering and the stock market's dropped, another 5,000, 10,000 points. And he says, we've seen the caseload drop a little bit. We've been through the first wave. And he says, I'm going to order the NFL to play again. And people view that as a symbol. That could be a very likely scenario. And I'm not suggesting even that that's the wrong answer, because I don't think there is a right answer. I think there will be a lot of people's opinions. And the one thing I could say for sure in all of this is, under any circumstance, under any condition, if you have a relative that's older, or if you have a family member whose immune system is compromised in any way, or they have diabetes or high blood pressure, those are the people that you really want to protect. Those are the loved ones that, under any circumstance, these are the ones that are most at risk. And there may be an answer which says, let's just take all of our seniors and the sicker folks and take care of them, weigh down them hand and foot, let them, but socially isolate them for a while, let life go on for much of the rest of the country. And by the way, that will happen at some degree geographically, because, this is hitting different cities at different times.
But I can imagine that would be an interesting debate in the fall between President Trump and Vice President Biden. It looks like it's going to be him. And I bet the quality of that debate, I'm sure, will be stellar. Okay, let me ask a couple other questions. One, I just want to give you an opportunity to answer this, because I had a couple of these. Andy Slavitt was one of the masterminds behind DME competitive bidding. Someone needs to ask him directly how he feels knowing that he eliminated 40% of home medical equipment suppliers, a move that set the stage for huge access issues for oxygen and ventilation.
It's good. It happened before I got there, but I understand the question. And it actually, my understanding of competitive bidding, for what people want to understand it, is it said, if you're going to sell something to Medicare that's basically a commodity, item, then you have to go through a competitive bidding process. You can't just name the price, and it saved Medicare a whole bunch of money. And at least to my knowledge, it didn't reduce anybody's access. And because I was there after it had been implemented, I made sure to look at, is everybody getting the equipment and so forth that they need. But no, this was done through Congress and through the folks before me.
Okay. Well, that was from Tyler Riddle. It turns out Andy wasn't one of the masterminds. Let's use our time now. I did ask some of these questions. Oh, wait a minute. There's more. I've had a hard time pinning this down. Do I need to scrub down cans, boxes, anything I bring home from the grocery store? And with what? Will isopropyl alcohol on a clean paper towel work? I'm 65 with a heart condition. Checking my temp daily. Thanks.
So you definitely want to be careful of food delivery, packaging, all of those things. What we do when we buy things at the grocery store is we leave it outside for 24 hours. Or we scrub it clean. We definitely remove the packaging. And I would advise the person who asked the question to do the same. Now, it may feel like an unnecessary precaution, but we do know that the virus can live on surfaces. And so
if you stock up on boxes of pasta, that box may have the virus. And now when you say you leave it outside, you're in Minnesota. People should understand that. So it's cold out, right?
Right.
So, but if you're in Arizona, don't leave the chicken outside for a day.
Right. You can clean things certainly, but they will, if you wait a day to bring things in, if you're buying a little bit ahead anyway, then just leave it either outside or in your garage or somewhere, and you should be fine.
You could bring it inside your apartment and just not touch it, right? For a day. No? Don't do
that. Yeah, if you bring it in your apartment, you might as well clean it. Use gloves, open the box, take it out of the box, put it in some Tupperware container. And look, we're just at a point where we don't know. It could be in 2 weeks someone learned something that tells us that was unnecessary. You don't have to don't quote us on this podcast as being the gospel, because we still have much to learn about the virus. But as of now, that's what we understand.
Okay, so the rule basically is doing something and then learning later that it's unnecessary is just a lot better than not doing something and then learning later that it's necessary.
Yes.
Okay, now that sounds obvious, but overlooking the obvious is something I never do.
That true? Never.
Okay. In important things. Sometimes I do overlook the obvious, but those are in trivial matters.
I actually think you're great about not overlooking the obvious as I think about it.
Yeah, that's one of my strengths, actually.
Yeah.
I learned that from comedy. I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you point out the obvious to people that they didn't know was obvious until you told them how obvious it was.
Yes, and actually that observation is not obvious, and I thank you for it. That's something I used to do quite a bit in hearings. And thank you for your service. Thank you for really pushing for what has been absolutely necessary, which is that people understand that they have to sequester themselves.
Yeah, and look, just so I'm not too embarrassed if I ever listen to this a few months later, part of the point that I hope we got across is, difficult things are happening, but it doesn't mean that the good things in life have to disappear by any means. And, one of my favorite things is talking to you and laughing and trading jokes. And, it would be a shame to think, for people out there to think that, oh my God, all of the things that give me pleasure have to go away as part of this stay home thing. It's the furthest from the truth. In fact, you need those joys even more. So I don't want anybody to misinterpret the little bit of fun we've had. And I certainly don't want to look back a year from now or 2 years from now, and God knows when this could have either been way worse or hopefully way better. Hopefully way, way, way better than things look right now. And go, boy, what were we talking about then? Because it will seem funny, or not in a funny way, but it would seem weird.
That's right.
Given wherever it went.
The humor, comedians do dark humor, and there's a purpose for dark humor. I think it's good for mental health, frankly. And I think it's embracing how difficult life can be. And how horrible it can be. And this is, we're in a surreal time. We're in a time right now that this is the first time in my life where I feel like I'm in a dream or something, where I feel like, wow, 9/11 was tremendously hard and sad. This is like nothing we ever expected, except, and you told me to watch this, Bill Gates gave a TED Talk in 2015 after the Ebola crisis that was remarkably prescient.
What are the key pieces? First is we need strong health systems in poor countries. That's where mothers can give birth safely, kids can get all their vaccines, but also where we'll see the outbreak very early on. We need a medical reserve corps. Lots of people who've got the training and background who are ready to go with the expertise. And then we need to pair those medical people with the military, taking advantage of the military's ability to move fast, do logistics, and secure areas. We need to do simulations, germ games, not war games, so that we see where the holes are. The last time a germ game was done in the United States was back in 2001, and it didn't go so well. So far, the score is germs 1, people 0. Finally, we need lots of advanced R&D in areas of vaccines and diagnostics. There are some big breakthroughs, like adeno-associated virus, that could work very, very quickly. Now, I don't have an exact budget for what this would cost, but I'm quite sure it's very modest compared to the potential harm. The World Bank estimates that if we have a worldwide flu epidemic, global wealth will go down by over $3 trillion. And we'd have millions and millions of deaths.
Well, that was remarkably prescient. Being that rich and that smart, well, I guess they're kind of connected, aren't they? So we didn't do that. And here we are. And we're all dealing with it.
We are all in this together. We are all, this is the surest thing I know. We are all in this together. And so if anybody is out there feeling that way, feeling, depressed or feeling disconnected or feeling, like they're spinning and things are out of control, just know that, you're not alone. Everybody is in this together. And I think it makes me feel better knowing that, we're getting through this together, because there's a lot of combined power in all of our collective connection.
Well, I know America is taking solace from your words, Andy. Sorry, I was back to the dark humor. But no, I appreciate that. I think we all feel and hope that way. But this is going to get so friggin' horrible for people who don't have work. We can't foreclose on people who can't pay their mortgage. We can't evict people who can't pay their rent. I think we're smart enough not to do that. So there's another unemployment thing, the guys who throw your stuff on the street when you're evicted.
Right, but those guys would be absolutely fabulous working in the coronavirus ward.
Okay. Well, that's a good note to end on, I guess. Well, keep up the good work, Andy. I've been watching you. You've been tireless. You've been a champion for common sense. You're an inspiration to me because you've moved beyond our mutual distaste for the president and are doing everything you can to, including giving advice to the White House and working for the common good, which is what we all should be doing all the time. So thank you, Andy.
And before we are finished, can I ask you a favor? Like,
yeah.
So my mom, who is like probably the number one Al Franken fan, and has been for years. Like she would, like if other people tell her that they're an Al Franken fan, she gets offended and has to outprove how much of an Al Franken fan she is. Well, she lives in Chicago.
Okay, I like her. I like her already.
Because of this travel stay home stuff. So I was wondering if at some point I could just call her up and have her say hi to you and you say hi to her on this podcast.
On the podcast?
Well, whether you keep it on there or not is going to be not my choice, but
I don't know if we're equipped to do that. Are we equipped to do that, Peter?
Sure. I think so.
Yeah. Okay, good. It turns out that Andy had alerted his mom, and he gave us his mom's number in Chicago, and I acceded to his wishes.
Hello.
Hello, Beth.
Yes, how are you?
I'm very good. Your son told you I'd be calling. He asked me to call you. And he said you're my biggest fan.
That's right. I am your biggest fan.
That's very kind of you to say. Andy, what was he like as a child?
Well, you're going to think I'm just bragging. He was so great. He really was. He was just thoughtful and kind and sweet. He was just wonderful. He was really easy.
Oh. Andy, was that nice?
I say the same about her.
Yeah, so you had, he was a happy child and...
happy and very considerate, very kind, just thoughtful.
Now, does he call? I mean, he was a great son having, having me call and having you on the podcast.
Does he call? Yes, he keeps in touch with me a lot.
Okay.
I think he's concerned about me that... something's going to happen to me, and I am strong and healthy, and I could beat him up in a second.
Okay. Well, spoken like a mom who beat her son repeatedly as a child.
Oh, now you're going to call DCFS on me, right?
I must say that it's an honor knowing your son. He's been a great public servant and continues to be. You should be very proud.
Well, he likes you a real lot.
Well, good.
I am telling you.
It's a mutual admiration society, and that's what we like to let the people in on here, is two guys blowing smoke up each other's ass.
Behind. But do tell him to call me when he gets off the podcast.
Okay. I've got to do a live radio thing, and I'll call you later. I'll call you later tonight.
You see?
I'll be holding my breath.
Yeah, duty. Duty calls for Andy Slavitt. Beth Slavitt, Andy's mom with a very thick Chicago accent. Thank you for your love and support.
Okay, Al. Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Okay, Beth.
Bye, Mom.
Okay. That's a new moment in our podcast. We've never done that. Andy, thank you. Go to your
you.
Radio call.
That was very sweet. And whether you keep it or not, it was
oh, we'll keep it. It's gold. well, that was nice. We're going to be obviously coming back to the coronavirus. Again, you know that I'm not a guy who wanted to do with this podcast the news of the day, but this is probably the news of the next several months, if not the next year and a half. So we're going to be coming back to this, and I think I'd like to get an economist on to tell us what we should be doing, you know, to save the economy. And also, I know we're going to need somebody talking us down, a mental health person, because I know I need that. Keep listening, and we'll see you then. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.